for Type 40. We're a Doctor Who podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network. On this show, we take an in-depth and closer look at this beloved television series, the merchandise, and yes, the spin-offs too. Doctor Who's a global fandom phenomenon that shaped the landscape of science fiction and fantasy for well over five decades. So step into our TARDIS and share our journey together here on Type 40. Yes, the 21st century is when it all changes. We're deep into it now, a couple of decades worth, aren't we? But you've got to be ready. I still don't know if I'm ready. Well, we're going to find out today if that still holds. For our much-talked-about, long-awaited Torchwood special. If you're new to the show and you're wondering who I am and what I'm going on about, I'm Dan Hadley, your regular Type 40 pilot, Birmingham's King of the Geeks. But more importantly, I'm a lifelong Doctor Who fan, as maybe you are, but maybe not, as I'm fond of saying. It's Doctor Who's a show for everybody, obviously, and if you're quite new to the Whoniverse, well, that's good too. We've got some declassified fun and games this time, I suppose you could say, and we've assigned a couple of our top time agents to come and talk about it, a very specific place in the Doctor Who universe. So we're gonna clock them in now. Firstly, reporting in from Twitter, she's the starry-eyed girl over there. To us, she's Sheffield's first foremost time lady, and for the purposes of today, she's WPC Sarah Graham. Welcome back, Sarah.
Hello, Dan. Nice to see you.
You're laughing already. We're going with the police theme. Keep it up, keep it up.
I know.
Evening all. You're supposed to take this seriously, Sarah. Yes. Hello.
Hello. You bamboozled me with that introduction.
Oh, I'm good at bamboozling, yes. Yeah. Well, it's Torchwood. We've got to amp it up a little bit, haven't we? We've got to amp it up.
Yeah, we have.
What JB would want. Go on.
It would.
How are we today? Good?
I'm very good, thank you. I'm looking forward to this one. Love Torchwood.
Are you really?
Excited.
Got a lot to say. Fantastic stuff. Well, you've got a lot to say. I wonder if he's got a lot to say, because bounding out of the rift at the moment, it's followed by a couple of weevils. I hope he fights them off. It's the immortal Mr. Kyle Wagner back with us. Aye, aye, Captain. How are things?
Yeah, well, you know, the boss needs to come in every once in a while and check and make sure things okay. But, you know, you've cleaned up the Type 40 nice, but I do have one issue. I told you to get rid of that hand in that canister months ago, Hadley.
Something's got to hold the door open.
I mean, come on now. It's just creepy. It's creepy, I'm telling you. Why do you have a hand in a canister?
Kyle, it's nearly Halloween.
You should see the hand signals I've been teaching it.
I can believe it. That. And then the next thing you know, you're going to be using it for regenerations and all that kind of stuff.
You've got to have a backup. You never know when these things are going to come in handy. I don't know. I could go under a bus tomorrow. And yeah, they might want to send back for a replacement, Dan. Where would the show be?
Well, even then, I still wouldn't know what the heck's going on with you, even after all this time. So,
we've been planning this episode for quite a while, haven't we? I know that you can't wait, Kyle.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I love Torchwood. The nice thing about Torchwood was it was within Doctor Who, but it was different enough to where it was able to really stand on its own. And I'm looking forward to kind of diving into that aspect of it and a lot of interesting aspects of Torchwood that I've never seen in a show since, really.
Yeah, that's a good. I think it was a lot of people's entry point into Doctor Who, funnily enough. And because of a lot of the virtues that you talked about there, I think that there's a lot of people I know talk about both shows really, really quite differently. But before we get there, I hate to tell you this, Kyle, but I don't know if you're aware of this, but we're part of the Fandom Podcast Network. So
I think I've heard of it. I know something about it.
Yeah, so it's only right. I know you're keen, but I think that I should hit a couple of our fixed points to remind anybody else listening.
It's your ship. I'm going to let you run it the way you feel you need to.
Well, you know, both of you, even you, Carl, you can find each and every edition of our show, past, present, and future, on the FPNet master feed. Did you know this? It's at fpnet.podbean.com and FPNet on the Podbean app. The Fandom Podcast Network's also on Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play, as well as the Apple Podcasts app, formerly known as iTunes. I have to keep reminding myself and anybody else, search for us there, add us and share us. And as well as that, there's a social media presence on Instagram and Twitter with Type 40 Doctor Who. There's the Type 40 Facebook page. And not forgetting the heart of our TARDIS, the lively, inclusive Type 40 Facebook group. It's grown by the week. I have to say it's grown by the week as we sort of ramp up to Series 12. We sincerely appreciate all our members, everything they bring there, all the conversation, and lots of fun and games. Links in the show notes to all of that, as always. Sarah, you spoke about Twitter earlier on, but that's not all you do, is it? You're all over the place. So what do you do and where do you do it?
Well, no, it's just Twitter now. I've settled down. Yeah, I've stopped wandering. yes, you can find me on Twitter at Starry Eyed Girl. And you can find me on YouTube now, courtesy of you, Dan, and
I don't know what you're talking about.
The Type 40 channel and the Facebook channel as well.
Yeah, well, some more of that, no doubt, a bit later on. Kyle, this is novel. Remind us where we can find you all over social media these days, as somebody I know says frequently.
I have something to do with this Fandom Podcast Network thing. You can find me pretty much on several shows on the Fandom Podcast Network, or you can follow me on Twitter at AKyleW, or you can follow me on Instagram at AKyleFandom as well.
Wow, all those shows. Remind me, how many shows is it you host currently?
There's probably
head in his hands already.
About three, but I mean, the network pushes out 12 podcasts now, so I'm a little busy. I'm a busy guy.
busy. I bet you hear the sound of your own voice sometimes when you go to sleep, don't you? I know I do.
It's more of like I hear the sound of yours and Adam O'Brien's and Kevin's. I'll say, Kyle, do this, fix this.
Yeah, that's it. We're all incorrigible at the Fandom Podcast Network. You can find me. I'm all over Instagram and Twitter. I've even braved Twitter lately as the Spacebook, talking about, everything really, inside the TARDIS and out, pretty much every day in movies, TV, comics, books, you name it, we're talking about it, and daily in the Facebook, Facebook group too. Come and find us. Come and have a chat. And colder nights are coming, everybody. I'm layering up. I don't know about you. Just like Captain Jack. You see, because he was fond of layering up, wasn't he? And he could do a lot worse than go to our Tee Public store. I don't know if you've seen this. It's really easy to go browsing at the Tee Public store. Kyle's been browsing clearly quite recently. He's got a fantastic Type 40 t-shirt on at the moment. But yeah, it's really easy to find our storefront there, where you can choose from a gallery of original designs and logos, like the Type 40 logo, the Fandom Podcast Network logo, all those shows. They're across t-shirts, mugs, hats, tapestries, you name it. It's all there, and it's all exclusive, and it all goes to help the Fandom Podcast Network into the bargain. Everybody wins, Kyle.
Yes, we always like it when everybody wins. We like it when you sport our gear. So please go to Tee Public, search the Fandom Podcast Network, or type in the name of any of the shows on the Fandom Podcast Network, and you're going to find t-shirts, you're going to find mugs, you're going to find all kinds of good stuff. And you know, the holidays are coming. I'm just saying.
Yeah, like I say, if you have to wear two t-shirts underneath your shirt and your jacket, you know, I can't think of anything better. You can show people at your discretion. But enough of all that, because this is what we've been waiting for, isn't it? This is a good sort of geek out and dive in to Torchwood, back in time to the beginnings of Torchwood first. And just to re-familiarise both of you, maybe, and anybody else who might be listening, about where this all came from. Because in 2005, I'm thinking back to 2005, where the new series of Doctor Who, it was still very, very new, wasn't it? And it had been a massive surprise, how successful it had been. I think even to those of us who were upbeat and optimistic and had a feeling about it, it was still quite a surprise. And it was certainly a surprise to the BBC, the appetite for it, and they wanted more. The audience was hungering for more, and the BBC wanted more, and it was more than it was physically possible, logistically possible, for the Doctor Who production team themselves to put together. So as is common practice, I suppose, a spin-off was requested within the BBC, and it would again be 13 50-minute episodes made in-house by BBC Wales with Russell T Davies, who at the time, of course, was sort of basking in that early success of Doctor Who and being lifted up, raised by the fan base as this godlike being. But yeah, he was still in place here, specifically commissioned to develop this... spin-offs are quite rare with the BBC, but to develop the whole idea of a spin-off in between seasons of Doctor Who. And sure enough, it was under the byline, wasn't it, that everything changes. And the history of Torchwood over over the next 6 or 7 years, it proved to be a fast and furious and quite fiery ride all of its own. You know, parallel to Doctor Who. I think that originally... the headlines were that it was Doctor Who meets the X-Files or the adult Doctor Who, wasn't it? It was the it was sold to us as sort of a more grown-up version, as if we ever needed a grown-up version. I don't know, but yeah, the creators and the cast, they were more than happy to sort of buy into that and play that up as the months counted down, as the series was in pre-production. And then the publicity started to kick and we started to see pictures and speculation about it. Because obviously Doctor Who, at that point, we all, certainly as a nation in Great Britain, part of our DNA, as they say, we all knew the dance. And so the idea of sort of remixing that, I think, made a lot of people quite nervous. But Sarah, I'm going to ask you about this first, as somebody who at the time was, you know, still quite fresh in the door, weren't you? What were your memories of the breaking out of Torchwood, and what was your gut feeling about this addition to the Doctor Who universe?
I just remember it being a really positive time, and it was really exciting because it was like an explosion. Well, it certainly was in the UK. And I liked the little drip feeds we had all throughout series two. Well, no, yeah. Yeah, from the Christmas Invasion, it was mentioned right at the end.
That's right. We had those little lines, didn't we? You wouldn't call it an arc. People do call it an arc. It wasn't particularly. But it was dotted into the script, wasn't it?
It was. And really cleverly done as well, because we did, by the end of season two, we did want to know what, you know, more about this organisation. And I thought that was a really clever hook.
Come to think of it, it had been in the finale of series one, hadn't it? It had been in the when they were playing The Weakest Link with the android.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that too.
Well, that was the in-joke, wasn't it? Because when they were filming Doctor Who, that was the name. They used the anagram Torchwood. But yeah, and I love Captain Jack anyway. I mean, he was... one of the, apart from Christopher Eccleston and Billy Piper, I mean, John was the standout from series one. So any excuse to get him back and find out more
because
about his character.
That was the thing, wasn't it? Captain Jack had exited the show. He looked like he'd exited life itself originally, but he exited the show in the series one finale.
On a cliffhanger.
And when they announced Torchwood, they did so with a publicity photograph showing not just John Barrowman as Captain Jack Harkness, but Eve Miles, who we'd seen in series one of Doctor Who as well, a familiar face, also there in that shot. And the original publicity photos were quite X-Files looking, weren't they? They were back to black,
yes.
It was all very moody.
And it looked stylish, and it had that kind of aesthetic to it, whereas... sometimes, I mean, not the new series, but obviously classical had got a different, very different style to it. And this did seem much more modern and more appealing to maybe people who weren't into the Doctor Who universe. That's how I kind of took it.
How did this transmit over your side of the pond, Kyle? Did you hear of Torchwood, this sort of loud cry in the way that we did, that something fresh was coming from the Doctor Who stable? What were your first memories of hearing the word Torchwood?
You know, it's interesting because especially those first few seasons of the new reincarnation of Doctor Who were a little bit not heavily advertised here in the States. And so when Torchwood came around, it really wasn't until BBC America got rolling here in the States, and they were the ones carrying Doctor Who and not the Sci-Fi Network, that we started to see more of Torchwood and it coming out. But I think where Torchwood really kind of started to get noticed was actually because of all the episodes of Doctor Who in that fourth season, where you saw Torchwood and the Torchwood crew in there. So a lot of people went back on to watch Torchwood then. So it was something, again, it was just because of just how it was in the States with that early, with those early seasons of Doctor Who and how they were aired. But, you know, what I remember feeling about Torchwood though too, was the fact that it was different from what Doctor Who was doing, even though it was tied into the Doctor Who universe, but it was definitely a much darker tone and with a lot more adult themes. And everybody loved John Barrowman. I mean, John Barrowman was the selling point for the show. But what I find very interesting, at least for us here in the States, and I don't know what her popularity is like over in your neck of the woods, but in the first episode, Barrowman was probably not the biggest name actor, most recognizable actor for the people in the States. It would probably be Indira Varma, who was in the first episode, who was very well known in the States because she had done a couple TV shows over here, and obviously a lot more known now because of her role in Game of Thrones. But even back then, she had done a few TV shows in the States and done a few movies, and people were aware of her more than probably anybody else.
I hadn't realized that, no. She was unknown here then, and she's largely still unknown now. She used to do sort of links in between B-movies on the Sci-Fi Channel over here, in character as this sort of alien princess, and little things like that. And she's been in movies and in TV shows, but yeah, she's definitely somebody who's never really built up a profile here.
Yeah, she's not a household name.
I think over here at the time, it's her face. It was, people maybe didn't know the name, but they knew her face.
Maybe to a lesser extent here, and I certainly think that, you know, since Game of Thrones, I mean, her character in that and some of the scenes that she was involved in, when you go back now and you see her in these early Torchwoods, as I've been doing over the last few weeks in preparation for this, it really does stand out. But the idea, Kyle, so when you come across this, having probably seen even the characters in Doctor Who first as an ensemble, but the idea of this sort of darker, more adult version of the Doctor Who universe, how did that seem to you like a promising and rich and viable prospect?
Well, because you've got to remember too, here in the States, if you say X-Files type show, you're going to get a lot of people's attention real quick. X-Files was one of the most popular shows in the US when it came to genre television, so that was going to grab a lot of people. And I think Torchwood has one of the more interesting histories of a television show ever, when you consider how the first two seasons went, then you had kind of the third season miniseries, and then the huge gap until the final season, which was Miracle Day, and that had a lot of influence from here in the US in that series as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's sort of, I wouldn't say it's a rags to riches story. I probably wouldn't go quite that far, because when it launched here, it was part of the station BBC Three, which was still quite new then. It had been around a few years, but most of the shows were kind of secondhand shows. Like they'd bolster their schedule with repeats of things like EastEnders, repeats of things that they knew were successful from BBC One and Two.
Doctor Who,
including Doctor Who, and really quite cheap comedy shows, cheap in every sense, both in budget and in the brand of humour. But they had a certain demographic. So when they commissioned Torchwood, because it was specifically commissioned originally for BBC Three, it was with a very specific mind. Even though they had that byline and there was talk of, as you say, talk of the X-Files as being a touchstone, it was also going for those, I'd say, 18 to 30-year-old in age range, very clearly aiming directly at them first. I've been watching series one over the last few weeks, as I've said, because it had been years since I'd seen it. I sort of let it pass out of my mind a little bit. And of course, Doctor Who has continued on, and other spin-offs have sort of come and gone. And I found it, how can I put this, very, after all these years going back to it, quite refreshing to see it again. And to get reacquainted with those characters. You know, you mentioned Indira Varma, Kyle. Seeing her again. I'm 3 in at the moment. and there's been actors in all three episodes, as you always get when you watch archive TV. I'm really thinking, is Torchwood really archive TV? When you go back and watch archive TV, actors, there were actors in it then who have now sadly passed on. Gareth Thomas from Blake 7, we lost Gareth in 2016. He was in one, but there's other actors, smaller actors, younger actors, who have gone on to bigger and better things
Forget that there was another doctor that was in Torchwood for several episodes too. Was Peter that? Capaldi.
Oh yes, of course there was. Yeah,
of course, yeah.
But it's this is sort of, I won't say it never breaks the spell, does it? It just adds an extra layer to something when you lose the sheen of it being new, when you go back to it and there's nostalgia value involved. But the big thing that's hit me about reconnecting with the show right from day one, literally from when everything changes in day one, was really how fresh and how much fun. It's really, really breezy compared to a lot of shows we're getting now, just 12 or 13 years on. It feels incredibly entertaining. And even though I haven't even watched any Russell T. Davies Doctor Who's for a while, it has the same energy. It's very, very watchable. And it stands, I think the characters that they put together in it, they're enough that they're archetypes that you can sort of dive straight in and know who's who and what makes them tick as a starting point, at least, without them seeming like stereotypes. So it's been, I always liked Torchwood, but I think I'd forgotten quite how much I liked it and quite how good it was. Sarah, those original series, have you got any sort of standout episodes and things that have stayed with you in the decades since?
Well, I love the campiness of it. So anything that was tongue in cheek, like day one with the sex alien, I'll bring it up now. but it was really well done, and that did kind of set the tone. Where yeah, okay, we're gonna have some fun with this. But yeah, and then you'd got the good mix of those episodes and then the darker episodes. I remember
psychological episodes.
The one with the circus people that came out of the rain. Mm-hmm. That terrified, I think, was that season two? And I think they won. They didn't beat them in the end, I don't remember.
That's the beauty that I can't remember. I'm watching this all almost like it's new.
Yeah, I think it, they came up against this villain and they didn't win. And that in itself is really refreshing from the Doctor Who universe. And the obviously the ones when Martha Jones comes into it, and it just, you know, adds that extra layer of getting these beloved characters, you know,
the connective tissue.
Yeah, getting giving her something a bit more meaty to do as well. And
when they do that, when they cross over like that, when they bring in characters like Martha, it does bring it more sharply, that contrast, as you were just talking about. Because it's a lot, that's another thing I noticed about watching Torchwood again, is it doesn't feel anywhere near as safe. You haven't got that guardian angel, that tour guide who's got all the answers. That character, that being, is not there anymore, and you do get the feeling right from the start that pretty much anything could happen, and they've built that into the into the format. Just as it's gone, sorry, you were going to say something.
I was just going to say, like, the high stakes, and you know, major characters died, you know, they lost nearly all the team
right from the beginning,
and it didn't pull any punches. And by the time we got to Children of Earth, oh god, how the show had evolved and how Jack had evolved. You know, he wasn't just this happy-go-lucky character. And by the, you know, he's lost Yanto, and everything he did with his grandchild, yeah, he's psychologically scarred, sorry. And he has to live with that. And it was just amazing just to see how it all played out, this journey.
It's, looking at John Barrowman, as you know, that silhouette of John Barrowman in the long brown coat with all those, I've joked a little bit about it, with all those layers and the gun holster and the big sort of Timberland style boots, By this point, I mean, certainly in Great Britain, Kyle, he was very much, I won't even say a fan favourite. He'd become a nation's favourite. You know, John Barrowman had been on Dancing on Ice and things as a contestant at this point. But Captain Jack Harkness had become a figure that was, in a short period of time, right up there with some of the biggest of Doctor Who names. I understand that you've met John Barrowman, Kyle. What was that like?
John Barrowman is a national treasure. He's a worldwide treasure. The great thing about John Barrowman is that nothing is too serious with him. As far as I go, he's wonderful with the fans. He knows what's important, but he is always so genuine. And that is the thing about John Barrowman, is he's genuine. He truly loves the fans, and he truly loves being able to interact with the fans in his own very unique way. he's so very giving to everybody around him. You know, Jack Harkness was, in my honest opinion, is probably the greatest character outside the spin-off out of Doctor Who. I mean, obviously, there wasn't a lot of spin-off characters in Doctor Who. We haven't had, a lot of pre-spin-off characters. But I think Jack Harkness, I will say this. I think Jack Harkness is by far the most popular spin-off character of modern Who. And I know a lot of people would say River Song, possibly. But Jack Harkness was just on such a level. I mean, they made Torchwood because of John Barrowman becoming so popular as Jack Harkness. Mm. And when they knew they wanted to expand, it was the first place they turned to John Barrowman as this character. And this character is very unique. And, you know, Barrowman, he just played him like himself. He played him with no shame. And that was, I think, the standout thing of it was with Jack Harkness, you never knew what direction he was coming from. You knew he was trying to do the right thing, but what was he willing to do to get there with it?
You're talking about the other spin-off characters, you know, and recurring characters in Doctor Who history, and it's just hit me, Carl, while you're speaking. Then, do you think it's because there's clearly a lot of John Barrowman in Jack Harkness, but what lifts him, I think, above others, and what sort of endears him a little more than people like even than River Song, who we've spoken about before, is the fact that he's quite vulnerable. Captain Jack, we get to see him at his lowest, don't we? And at his, an almost quite fragile person who's got these sort of holes in his memory and things like. Do you think that all contributes, Kyle?
I think that contributes, and I think just the aspect of the mystery of Jack Harkness, and again how John Barrowman played the character. Jack Harkness was completely likable across the board in every way. Anybody who I have known that has watched Doctor Who, nobody dislikes Jack Harkness. And
it's even when he's doing things which are kind of morally questionable, particularly, obviously, they couldn't do things like that so much in Doctor Who. His role in that was a little bit more black and white. He could pick up a gun when the Doctor wouldn't, but apart from that, it was, you know, he was like the hired sort of gun, really, the rough and tumble. But in Torchwood, he was placed in those situations quite a lot, wasn't he, Carl, where he didn't always make the sort of the more morally sound judgment, even if it was in his professional interests.
Yeah, it's a good point, and I think that's one of the reasons why Torchwood worked so well, is because you had this main character who couldn't just go by the book, and he could, because he knew things. He knew so much more than the other characters, and you know, the fact that he was keeping secrets from the other characters, it just worked, and he was the heartbeat of that show. And I think, you know, the other aspect of that is the amazing chemistry that John Barrowman had with Eve Moyles on that on that show too. Those two were one of the greatest pairings, I think, in science fiction history.
I think as unthinkable, I don't know if you view it this way, Sarah, but I think Torchwood is pretty much unthinkable without John Barrowman. As much as that is the case, watching these first few now, another thing that's hit me is how they still manage to keep him, even though it's a very strong silhouette and it's a very, very complete, incomplete character. You know, it's the entry character is Eve Miles as Gwen Cooper. I'd even go so far as to say that as this early in proceedings, she's the main character, and I think I'd not quite remembered quite how much. You know, we enter the story with her. We encounter all the other characters with her. She's the person who, when chaos is going around, certainly in these first few episodes, and all these different gadgets that can bring sort of ghosts back to life and envision and things like that, and alien bits of kit, we see her reaction and how unsettled she is to being exposed to these things. We see her sort of being gradually getting used to it, being emotionally and physically sort of tempered to this bigger world, broader canvas, and I suppose the larger. I mean, because obviously being a policewoman before, she'd go do things by the book, go through training, but here she's put in a situation where the moral compass and going by the book, as Kyle's just said, you know, it's not always possible. So again, it's another development of the idea of what it takes to be a Doctor Who companion. Have you got any, when you look back, have you got any favourites of that supporting cast, though? Because I know it wasn't all about Gwen Cooper, but who else stands out to you?
Well, definitely Gwen. I like Reese as well, the husband, because it's interesting that you were saying about her being like a doctoral companion, because she had got this balance of, you know, having to deal with all these alien threats and, you know, things that, you know, that she's not used to, you know, that out of the real world.
And they were right on her doorstep as well, weren't they?
Because and then going back to going home to her husband. No, he wasn't. Was he a fiancé?
Yeah.
And then, you know, having to come back to that and how Reese slowly got pulled in. Because he reminded me a little bit of Mickey. It was kind of this, I don't want to say bumbling character, but...
But he's a very, you know, he's a very sweet-natured character in the same... Yeah. He's a pure character. You know,
and, you know, getting... He slowly gets dragged into this crazy world. And I really like that development. And I also really like Owen as well. You know, what happened in his journey and... him dying in season 2, that was real. I found that really hard. But they're all lovely. I mean, Tosh, I loved her journey because she was kind of, I always thought at first that she was maybe the most underdeveloped character. And I'm glad in season 2 she got her chance to shine. She was very, always seemed to be in the background.
It's a strange one with that, because Nako Mori, who played Tosh Toshiko, she'd been on British TV since she was a teenager as a guest actor and absolutely fabulous and things like that. So she was probably more well known than most of the cast here.
Yeah.
But that character, I suppose that's the not the most mysterious, but it's the least developed. But she does quite a lot with really really quite little. But yeah, they did have a habit of sort of making us care about these characters in the true Joss Whedon style, making us care about them, Kyle, and then they'd bump them off, wouldn't they? When they started doing this, did this shock you? And if so, whose death surprised and shocked you the most?
To be honest with you, I want to address the thing about this cast was it was across the board was so well acted. Tosh was probably the least developed character. I agree with that. But like Bern Gorman's performance as Owen Harper, the great thing about that was you wanted to just beat the living hell out of Owen. He was a jerk. Yes. He was, and you just wanted to knock him silly. And that was such great acting by Bern Gorman to bring out that emotion in you.
Because he would come unstuck quite regularly, wouldn't he? Throughout.
Yeah.
Throughout
well, I mean, the show. I think that's even great acting. And I go back to a couple of performances that always stand out to me as far as when you can get an audience to truly despise you. And that two performances is Joffrey in Game of Thrones, the young man who played Joffrey.
Oh, yeah.
And Jason Isaacs in the movie The Patriot.
I've not seen that, but I have heard. Yeah.
It was so bad for him that somebody actually would, in a restaurant in the States, refused him service because they were so angry when that movie came out. But The interesting thing with Torchwood was how they developed these characters. Obviously, Eve Miles as Gwen Cooper was kind of our point of view character. And you brought up a good point with Reese, played by Kai Owen. He was kind of like the companion to Torchwood. He was that companion, like the everyman trying to figure out what was going on. Of course, I was a fan of Gareth David Lloyd as Yanto and Jones in this series. Yeah. I thought he was always kind of the man of mystery. And the kind of the man who was the most intriguing. And then obviously they set up going later on at him having more of a relationship with Jack Harkness.
Well, he was sort of Alfred to his Batman, really.
Yeah. So I thought that was quite interesting. But again, as far as like the death of these characters, it fit within the show because they established this right out of the gate with the first episode that anybody is fair game to die. Obviously we knew John Barrowman wasn't going and Jack Harkness wasn't going to pass away, but anybody else on the team was very, very questionable about what their future was. And really, even when you think about it, when they finally did in 2011, when they did Miracle Day, the only people who were alive from the original Torchwood were Jack Harkness and Gwen Cooper.
It's interesting, because I don't know if you know here, Kyle, in Cardiff, I think it's still there is actually a memorial for Yanto Jones. And there's a little plaque done by the, and it's the there's a shopping centre nearby where they filmed it on Cardiff Bay, and they actually made a plaque, and it says, "We salute Yanto Jones for saving." Is it saving the human race, something like that? Thank you, man.
I can't remember, but I know it's still there.
I've got a photo. I'll send it you so you can put it on the.
It was there as soon as those particular episodes. That was season three. It's there from when those episodes aired. It was there the entire time the Doctor Who Experience was open, and I gather it's still there after several floods to the basin area of Cardiff Bay.
Yeah.
It's still there in some form.
It's still there,
and the experience is gone.
Yeah,
you know, this shrine still stands.
Yeah. On, I do have a question for you guys. When they incorporated Martha Jones into season two of Torchwood for several episodes, did you really think that they were going to maybe try to establish her as a recurring main character of the cast and trying to add her into that? Because I know a lot of people kind of got that feeling initially. It's like, oh, well, maybe they didn't think Gwen was doing quite well with the audiences or something like that. They were bringing in this character of Martha Jones, who people knew from her relationship with Jack in her season of Doctor Who. And, you know, it was great to see her, but because I do like the relationship she had with Jack Harkness, but I'm glad they didn't make her a permanent part of the cast.
I did wonder about that. I did think there was a chance she was going to stay in it permanently. Obviously, that wasn't the case. I think it was an arc of about three or four episodes, wasn't it? I think the main reason that they did that, you know, the whole thing with Martha. I'm glad you brought that up. The whole thing with Martha was, I think, very much something that Russell T. Davies wanted to do. Because he'd got to a situation with Martha and Free Magimen on Doctor Who itself, where he'd written that character as part of Series 3, and I think he'd originally intended Martha to continue to Series 4, but through as the writing sort of progressed, he found the character had sort of reached a natural end a lot sooner than he'd originally planned. But he felt that Freema still had a lot further to give in the role, and thought it would be a better service to her and to this character that they built up together to incorporate her both in Torchwood and to bring her back in Series 4 of Doctor Who for that sort of short arc. And it does, oddly, because that relationship that she's got with Jack that she formed at the end of Series 3, wasn't it, of Doctor Who itself, you know, they get on in a different way. Going back and revisiting that without the Doctor in the picture, that also brings a whole new set of not moral questions as such, but it's certainly a different dynamic, isn't it, Sarah?
It is, and it's interesting how the Doctor comes into it, because initially, basically, the only reason Jack is there in Cardiff is because he's hanging around the Rift that was set up in Boomtown, because he wants to get back to he wants to find the Doctor again. So it's interesting, you know, at the end of season one, when he becomes reunited with the Doctor, and then we see him in season three of Doctor Who, it's interesting how actually he's got the option of going back to travelling in the TARDIS with Doctor and Martha, and he actually chooses his team. He's already grown in just one season, and I really liked, you know, how that played out, and you know what the other characters think, because obviously Gwen and Yanto have no idea about the Doctor. He's a mystery to him until, you know, further down the line. So I thought that was interesting, having their perspective as well.
Because although they do revisit, they bring in those certain elements of Doctor Who lore, mm. like the cyber technology in the form of a cyber woman and things like that. They never really rely too much on Doctor Who. They certainly don't allow sort of gifts from the Doctor to sort of bail them out. They don't. Mm. There's no other character that sort of steps in at the last minute in some sort of left field curveball that you couldn't possibly see coming. There's nothing cheap about this show. They do really, really go for it. And I think that the actors, I mean, clearly you can see from the beginning, they know potentially it's one of the roles of a lifetime. You know, they're part of something that's just exploded, but their own corner of it, and to obviously to be playing these characters that have got that air of uncertainty about them. Yeah, it must have been. You can see how excited they are. You can. There's an energy about the entire show, and for as much as it's those first two seasons in particular, when it was on BBC Three and then it moved to BBC Two for season two, as the show's profile gained, those excesses. I watched episode one when I was a few weeks ago, and within, I think, 3 minutes of the screen time, somebody uses the F word, you know, and then we have, within 10 minutes, there's a gruesome, bloody, violent death. You know, they did want to sort of shake you to realise, no, we are serious. This is a different sort of animal. You know, they go for that. But as complex as these characters are, though, you still do relate to them. You still do care for them. And Kyle, you know, there was none of those characters when they did start to sort of kill them off. You were never wishing any of them dead, were you?
No, I. Excuse me. I don't think we were, but it wasn't heartbreaking that they died either. Because I think again, with the world they set up in Torchwood, we knew the risks.
Yeah.
And we knew what was going to happen to it, what the possible risks were. And but it was, Torchwood is such a unique series because you had these two seasons that were just absolutely outstanding, pulled in really strong ratings, and then things kind of changed and shifted, and we went to Children of Earth, which is just absolutely outstanding, and that changed the game. That was Torchwood changing the game completely again when Children of Earth hit.
It was indeed, but hold that thought for a minute, because as you say, Torchwood did continue. It became something else entirely, and we've got all that to talk about. But sideways from us talking about all things Doctor Who and Torchwood here on Type 40, there's all those other shows that we know you'll enjoy listening to as part of the Fandom Podcast Network elsewhere, and you don't have to have Tosh's IT skills to find any of it. So here's a friend of ours with a few words about all of that, and then Kyle, Sarah and I will be back for more Torchwood talk in a couple of minutes. Hang around.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to recommend these other great podcasts on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast with the latest news, reviews, and other fun topics in pop culture. For you Highlander fans, we've got Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast where we cover all things Highlander. Couch Potato Theater is for you movie buffs, our podcast celebrating the cult classics and fan favorite movies we don't get off the couch for. Time Warp, a look back on our classic and nostalgic fandoms that we still celebrate today. We also have End Zone for you NFL fans, our podcast talking about all things current in the NFL and giving our best mediocre fantasy football advice. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast with hosts Tom, Brandon, and Chris discussing the master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. And for you Star Trek Discovery and Orville fans, we have Discoville, talking about everything Discovery and the Orville. And for you hard rock music fans, we have the Hair Metal podcast, the Hair Metal Podcast rediscovers the nostalgia of the 1980s hair metal bands. And we also have Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, where we discuss all things Doctor Who, both past and present. And our newest podcast, Lethal Mullet, our podcast celebrating action movies from the 1980s with your host, Adam P. O'Brien. You can find these great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, and now on Spotify. On Facebook, you can find us at Fandom Podcast Network, on Instagram, Fandom Podcast Network, and also on Twitter at FanPod Network. You can also email us directly at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the Fandom Podcast Network. And remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
We're back. You know, Kyle, yeah, I'm sure you know, Culture Clash is the highlight of my listening week. Don't tell any of the others, though. Yeah, it's how's it all going over there? What are you looking forward to for the rest of 2019?
Well, for the rest of 2019, right now, the big thing everybody seems to be talking about is Joker right now. I think it's doing gangbusters in the box office here, but it's definitely got some interesting things to it. But obviously what everybody's going to be talking about is probably two big things for the family and kids. You've got Frozen 2 coming from Disney. Mm-hmm. And of course on December 20th, Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, which tomorrow night, the new trailer comes out and tickets go on sale after the airing of the new trailer here in the States.
Are you the kind, do you pre-order your tickets? Do you buy a ticket as soon as you're able to, or do you wait and take your chances at the...
It depends on the film. With Star Wars, I will pre-order my ticket in advance. Here in the States, with most of the theaters now, we can also choose our seat when we buy our ticket. So it just makes it that much easier, and you get where you know where you're going to sit and everything. So yeah, just do a little Fandango or something like that, and you got your ticket ready for you, and you throw it, download it on your phone, and you just walk in. It saves a lot of hassle.
How about you, Sarah? What are you looking forward to for the rest of 2019?
I'm looking forward to Jumanji, the second film. I really didn't think I'd enjoy it as much as I did, but yeah, I loved it. And it's always wonderful to see Karen Gillan. Yeah, another Doctor reference. And the there's a new show on the Sheep movie out. Have you seen?
I've seen that. I've heard.
What's it? Remind us what it's called again, because
it's Farmageddon.
I thought it was.
Which is that's my level right there. So
because you've got two young children, haven't you? As well, you know, you'd probably go and see it anyway, though, wouldn't you?
I would, yeah.
Yeah, it's all going on. And as you say, Doctor Who alumni and Torchwood alumni are absolutely everywhere, aren't they? I gather that Bern Gorman, who played Owen Harper in Torchwood, is part of the new Game of Thrones prequel thing that they're shooting.
Is it?
I believe so. I think they've only shot a pilot at the moment. But yeah, he's sort of lined up for that. So he may not be in that for very long either. Well, you know, the Game of Thrones universe is like. Yeah. But they've all gone on to all manner of things. And Nako Mori played Tosh. She's continued to turn up in various dramas. So all over British television. I gather in a few films as well. Indira Varma, as Carl mentioned earlier on, is quite increasingly high profile and unmistakable. Seems to be able to play pretty much anything they throw at her.
Hey, Dan, just want to interrupt you. You were talking about Bern Gorman. Bern Gorman is going to be a key player in the season 4 of the upcoming season of The Expanse on Amazon.
Oh, is he?
Oh, wow.
This is a show that I have been meaning to watch. I keep hearing more and more about it, and I've been waiting for a window in my schedule, which I now have. Yeah, I'm gonna get on that. Bern Gorman in The Expanse. Fantastic. Yeah, I think he's a terrific actor. Yeah. I've enjoyed him in pretty much everything. But yeah, I mean, because he departed Torchwood at the end of season 2. Both Owen and Tosh, they bought the farm, I think the expression is. And yeah, they left in an emotional sort of season finale, which, you know, as Carl was sort of mentioning, it did move you when they did this sort of thing, but it also felt like a natural end in a lot of cases, or that characters were getting a sort of comeuppance But in that intervening time, Torchwood's profile and ratings, it grew, grew considerably, didn't it? It had a fan base all of its own, really. And with that third season, which took a while in getting to us, I think it was a good couple of years, Russell T. Davies returned right to the heart of it as the showrunner and the lead writer. I believe the only writer. I think they sort of co-wrote it with a lot of other people as it moved on. But sort of reinvented Torchwood, as Carl was saying, as this event show, now promoted again. In the UK, it went from BBC Two right to BBC One. In the prime time 9 p.m. slot, which is where dramas like The Line of Duty, we still get big dramas rolled out in the 9 p.m. slot now, don't we, Sarah? All these years
Lawfare, that kind of thing,
Everything always in that slot. And they played the third series. The five episodes went out over a single week. That was also something, a model of delivering drama that they'd been trialling a little at the BBC at that point. And so there was a little bit of a gamble involved. It seemed like Torchwood, there was a certain feeling amongst fandom at the time that Torchwood might be getting a little bit too big for its boots, making such a big leap and making such a song and dance. But just to remind you, I've got a quick look at the synopsis here. For series three of Torchwood, an ordinary day becomes a world of terror as every single child in the world stops. A message is sent to all the governments on Earth, we are coming. But as a trap closes around Captain Jack, sins of the past are returning as long-forgotten events from 1965 threaten to reveal an awful truth. Torchwood are forced underground as the government takes swift and brutal action, with members of the team being hunted down. Britain risks becoming a rogue state, with the mysterious and powerful 456 drawing closer. Captain Jack, Gwen and Yanto are helpless as events escalate. I haven't got there in my rewatch yet, but that's the cinematic premise and the event model that we now see. Platforms like Netflix and Hulu, they do event series, don't they, Kyle? They do these 5 to 10 part runs. It's quite common now, but starkly in 2009, this was so different. Was this Torchwood's finest hour, Kyle? Is that how you feel?
I think so. I think this is what, especially in the States, what people got people's attention on Torchwood was this series, Children of Earth. I remember this got even a lot of big advertising on BBC America at the time, and they were really pushing it, and they were starting to do some Torchwood marathons at that point, getting ready for this. So I think that's where a lot of people jumped on here, at least here in the States. And this was some of the most outstanding television of that year. Without a doubt, and I think it's also definitely the high point for Torchwood as far as creatively and storyline wise. Children of Earth is probably one of the best run arcs in what I'll call the entire Doctor Who universe, when in throwing into Torchwood and other spin-offs and things like that, because it stands out and it's so incredibly powerful.
I don't think that's an exaggeration at all. And I mean, from what I remember about it, because I probably should have gone and looked this up, shouldn't I? But no, that's cheating. From what I remember about it, Russell T. Davies had had the idea for this story arc in his head for a good few years before the premise was turned into a series three of Torchwood. The whole sort of moral question behind it as regards what a government would do, what would happen to society if such a situation happened, and in such a short period of time. I think and underneath the science fiction, if you were to strip away the science fiction trappings of it, I'm saying there's still a lot that can be said about human nature, in the same sense that now Black Mirror has become famous for doing. So I think it kind of led the way for that, because Black Mirror, the original Black Mirrors, was still a couple of years away. So you've got that. It also, I think, shows Russell T. Davies being a lifelong geek. I was going to say how learned he is in sci-fi then, but no, it's being a lifelong geek. All the traditions of British sci-fi that are in there, it's very reminiscent of the kind of work that Nigel Neal used to write in the various Quatermass serials, if either of you have ever seen those. And certain sort of anthology series for and proper hard sci-fi books. It's something. So to take something like Torchwood, which at the time had a reputation as being maybe a little goofy, and to make this sort of statement with it, and to get everybody talking, particularly and affected by something that involve children in something, Sarah. You know, you're a parent. I'm a parent. You involve children in something like this. It gets right inside you, doesn't it? How do you remember that feeling? Do you remember?
I do, because I just had. This was 2009, so I'd just become a mother. I'd got Josh, and it was very difficult to watch. It was thrilling. You know, it was really. You know, it was, the writing was superb, but. God, it was dark, and I cried so much. I just remember crying. I cried with Yanta, I cried with the kids, and the whole idea of the 4, 5, 6. I mean, they looked terrifying anyway, but they actually, you know, what was behind, you know, their agenda, and the fact that they were using them just for fun, just for, you know, as a recreational thing, and he has a twisted mind, that Russell T.
It's very biting and very, very cruel.
Yes, and you know, the moral implications and what Jack is faced to do. I think it was the highest point for the series, but for poor Jack, you know, it was his lowest point. And there's always that bittersweet feeling at the end, because, you know, yeah, he'd saved the world, but at what cost? I think it was the grimmest it had ever been, even for Torchwood at that point.
It really does. I think it really pushes John Barrowman. You know, I think John Barrowman would probably be one of the first to admit that, you know, he's got no pretensions about being Alec Guinness or Sir John Gielgud, has he? You know, John Barrowman's he's led by his personality. It's a real push to what he's able to get that character to do, but it really gets to you. Kyle, looking at Torchwood then becoming an event show as it was, did that strike you as being something that it was brave to do? Was it like, oh, Torchwood, they really mean business now?
It felt like, okay, this seems like a natural progression for Torchwood, because I think that we kind of could see the writing on the wall that they weren't going to do another full-on season, but they still had more story to tell. The thing I really remember about Children of Earth in this case is how much Torchwood pushed the envelope, not just in the darkness of it and the grittiness of the storyline, but also... this was some of the most openly sexual things I had seen on television, especially for the gay and lesbian community, as far as that goes. And you continued even more. I remember being shocked by it. I mean, not in the way like, oh my God, I'm offended by this or whatever. Just shocked, because they did it in a way that was like, this is just part of the story. They didn't make a big deal out of it. They didn't do anything like that, but I mean, there was just so much with it, and it's, you know, they really focused a lot on the relationship between Jack and Yanto, and this, and it was a very important piece of the puzzle in this series, and that's why it made certain moments in this just absolutely heart wrenching. And I give a lot of credit to the writers, Russell T. Davies, and the people who worked on this, and John Barrowman especially, just to bring all of it together. And again, like you said, this was dark. This series. Torchwood was coming from a very dark place after the events of season 2, and this series was some of the secrets that they were revealing and where they were going with the Captain Jack character. It was dark, and it was hard to watch. And like you guys said, when you start involving children as part of the storyline, it gets more emotional. And this series is, I just think, is some of the finest writing and finest acted. And it makes it stand out so incredibly powerful. And I've had people ask me, it's like, well, you know, I'm kind of curious about Torchwood. I point them to Children of Earth. If you know, if you don't have the time to invest in the full seasons, watch Children of Earth.
Because for all the plates that are spinning during that, when you reflect, it's incredible that it's 5 hours worth of television, that it all still does come together, that none of it is, none of it's disentangled in any way, none of it's irrelevant. It's really, really well crafted. And maybe that's because, as I say, because the idea had lived with Russell T. Davis for quite a time. Maybe it's because they spent a couple of years putting the whole thing together, that bit of extra TLC. Maybe that's why it has endured as long as it has, why it's still the one that Kyle would point people towards right away. I think it's that what's interested me the most about what you've just said, Kyle, and I think it says a lot about sometimes, you know, the difference between our great nations and our attitudes in Great Britain compared to the United States, is that over here, many people, that the writing wasn't so much on the wall. There was a lot of feeling, now, why have they had to do this? I'd say most fans wanted another 13 episodes dripped out on the weekly. They felt they were getting all of this abundance all at once, and that it wasn't a fair trade-off. I think that is something psychologically to do with the British. I think we are a little more afraid of change with these things. I don't know what it is. I'm not sure at all. Change would continue. Change would become a thing, because there was a fourth season of Torchwood eventually, again with Russell T. Davis, who by this point was very sort of clear and separate from his role as showrunner of Doctor Who. So he was back at the creative head of Torchwood. It's very much something that he had conceived of and that he was piloting. But in the instance where it was a fourth season, he went into development and into discussions with American networks originally. I think it was with the Fox network he was originally talking to about carrying Torchwood through. That didn't come to pass in the end. There was no... I don't know why they would have made... I would imagine, knowing Russell T. Davies and knowing some of the progressive elements to the sort of stories that he wanted to tell, and how uncompromising he would have been on the dramatic aspects, maybe there was a line in the sand there. But eventually the fourth season of Torchwood did find a home with the Stars network, the Stars platform, I should say, which I believe is part of a bigger network in the States, isn't it, Kyle? It's sort of, it's a bit more like HBO in profile.
Yeah, it's a little bit more of a premium network here in the States. This, you know, when I look at Miracle Day, especially here in the States, I think this was an experiment gone wrong.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, there was a, when I said about Torchwood, it was the series that sort of many of you did get too big for its boots. In this instance, it really did take a step up again, didn't it? We got 10 episodes. They'd gone very squarely for a more cinematic production values they'd recruited people like Jane Espenson, who'd been, I believe, a lead writer on Buffy the Vampire Slayer and you know, who Russell T. Davis was a big fan of. I think he installed her pretty much as his second on the show, and also a bit of extra continuity to it. There are other writers involved, but somebody who, between the two of them, they could sort of work and revise each other's work to lessen the chances that it would look neither one thing nor the other, like it looked like it didn't belong, that there would be that sort of that flavour of its all of its own, but that it was still anchored in Torchwood, just a Torchwood that was stepping up. It tells a looser story, but with quite a strong arc and a strong central sci-fi idea. I've got a premise to that here too, because I have to remind my memory of some of these things. It says, one day, nobody dies. All across the world for one day, nobody dies. And then the next day, and the next, and the next. People keep aging, they get hurt and sick, but they never die. The result, a population boom overnight. With all the extra people, resources are finite. It's said that in 4 months' time, the human race will cease to be viable. But this can't be a natural event. Someone's got to be behind it. It's a race against time, as CIA agent Rex Matheson investigates a global conspiracy. The answer lies within an old secret British Institute. I wonder what that could be. As Rex keeps asking, what is Torchwood? So he's in the Gwen situation there. Gwen was originally. He's drawn into a world of adventure and a threat to change what it means to be human forever. Yeah, 8 years. This is 8 years ago. You know, this there's no easy way of putting it. This wasn't a critical success. And fans, you know, it was broadly with fans, yeah, it was a failure as well. Why, with hindsight, Kyle, go on. Why do you think that was? 8 years hindsight.
Okay, so I could even say this after I first watched this. Big thing about this Return of Torchwood was obviously a much heavier American influence within the American network behind it. So you saw several American actors in it. Of course, big names include Mekhi Phifer, who is actually a very good actor. He had a phenomenal run on ER. He's been in several films. He was very good and very well known. That was probably about the height of Mekhi Phifer's popularity. Of course, you also had Bill Pullman in that of probably here in the U.S. most famous for Independence, being the president in Independence Day.
Oh, yeah.
So I think what happened here in this case was I do think Russell wanted to get more Torchwood out, but BBC was just not game at that point. So he chopped it. He went to Fox. That didn't work. Starz stepped up, which gave him a little bit more flexibility because it was a premium channel. However, it became the Americanized Torchwood too much. And I think the idea was, okay, we're going to do this with the idea of getting an American Torchwood spun out of this with Mekhi Phifer. Because if you remember at the end of Miracle Day, spoilers, sweetie, Mekhi Phifer is still immortal like John Barrowman's Jack Harkness is now. This just didn't take off. The story of this was plotting. It put way too much focus on the American cast and really kind of pushed Jack Harkness and Gwen to the background a little bit, more so than they should have been. And it just... I don't think it appealed enough to the tortured fans that were already out there. It was kind of this amalgamation of a couple of different things, and it just didn't catch. I think when people want Torchwood, they want Jack Harkness, and that's the bottom line, and that's the only way I think any kind of Torchwood works is Jack Harkness has to be involved and be a central character. And in this case, he was, but he wasn't. He still felt like he was a secondary character to Mekhi Phifer's character and a few of the other characters, and it was just... the whole thing just felt somewhat convoluted and like it was overwritten and overthought.
Yeah, like the concept had sort of run away with them a little bit, and their ambitions for Torchwood had perhaps run away with them a little.
I think that's a fair assessment.
But funny enough, I mean, this is why I have very few memories of it. It all seems, apart from a strong episode, which was a love story, sort of like a period episode, I believe was set in the 40s or the 50s, could have been with Jack and a guy that he'd met. I remember that as being very affecting, but I also remember it being quite standalone and everything going on around it. I can't remember the consequences. I can't remember who did what, how they related to one another. I know that they had some great people in it. I know Nana Visitor from Deep Space Nine was in it. I love her. I think she's great. Bill Pullman. I remember he was good in it as a sort of despicable character. So I remember certain things that got my attention, but for whatever reason, it certainly didn't keep it. And yeah, I remember it sort of spluttering its way to a long and drawn out conclusion. I remember the stuff from series, not just series 3, but series 2 and 1, you know, a lot clearer. Sarah, with Miracle Day, I mean, Are you gonna throw the grenade? No, was it a miracle for you?
Yeah. No.
Oh. No. I'm trying to represent all opinions on this show.
I'm not as hard on it as maybe Kyle is. It had a good premise. It started very strong, but I think with the American stuff, I think it lost the charm that made it unique. You know, it had that British and, you know, being set in Cardiff. I mean, Russell was keen to get Wales you know, on the map.
And, well, yeah, wait, Sarah, Sarah, are you saying it's all of us Americans' fault?
Yes, it's your fault, girl. No, I wouldn't go that far. But I think I can see a lot of parallels between. He's going to fall out of me now.
Tweet at Starry Eye Girl.
But there's a lot of parallels between the Doctor Who TV movie and this, you know, having that American, obviously, because that's where the money
production-wise. Was,
yeah. And, you know, getting, and obviously that, I think there's lessons that can be learned from both of these. But yeah, I think Kyle's absolutely right. Captain Jack had become a supporting character in his own show. And, you know, it did kind of peter out. And like you were saying, I remember the first sort of half of the episodes really strong. Like Gwen's dad, I think he had a heart attack and then didn't die, and what was going to happen to him.
Yeah.
And I remember there was actually some really good flashback stuff, because RTD did flesh out. There's a lot to flesh out with Jack, because we don't know, you know, with his time age and his amnesia, we don't know his full story. So that gave him scope to, you know, go into that and explore that a bit more. But then the actual resolution, it was just sloppy, and it wasn't.
It should have been about 6 episodes instead of 10 episodes.
It probably
is that simple, isn't it? The solution is probably a very, very simple one. You know, the format that they'd abandoned to do this bigger thing. Mm. And to be honest, they probably, looking at it, it wouldn't surprise me if it was originally conceived exactly as you've said, actually, Carl, either 5 or 6 parts, and they'd gone to Stars, maybe. Sorry, Stars, if you're listening to this and this is completely wrong. This is just my gut instinct, but I can imagine them putting this together, going to Stars and saying, yeah, we'll do it, but we need 10. Can't 5 or 6, we need 10.
I think that, to me, it seemed that they were trying to repeat the success of Children on Earth with the event television, and it just didn't, for whatever reason, it didn't get together, it didn't fit well.
So, given the fact that none of us particularly like this thing, it's a bit of a miracle in itself, really, isn't it, that anybody still sort of wants any Torchwood at all? Because a few short months ago from when we were talking, right in the middle of another gap year for Doctor Who itself, one Mr. John Barrowman, as he is inclined to do, opened his mouth once again, didn't he, about a possible future for Torchwood to return as a film. And that, you know, when that was spoken of, the media, the actual press launched on that, and it started to turn up in traditional newspapers and all over the internet. And then we'd got, shortly after that, somebody asked Naoko Mori about it, and she, you know, very diplomatically, and probably, you know, remembering that they killed her off, you know, as she didn't shoot the idea down about Torchwood possibly coming back, and, you know, she said she favoured the idea of Torchwood TNG as a next generation
She's enjoying a renaissance at the moment with the audios on Big Finish.
Well, yeah, this is it. The audios do very well. You know, it's a long green range. I think Big Finish put out about 30 standalone stories with some of the older cast. They've done official continuations, which have been kind of stewarded by Russell T Davies for audio. Mm. And there was a nice line in books for a while. But what's the feasibility of this, do you feel, Kyle? Have people got long memories? Or, you know, people want to see these, at least John Barrowman as Captain Jack again with Gwen Cooper under the name of Torchwood.
I think it's feasible to do it. There are a couple issues of whether it will get done or not. First of all, John Barrowman's schedule is incredibly busier than what it was back then. He's obviously become a much bigger star here in the States. He's on several of the CW shows. He's constantly on the con circuit. The other issue is I don't think you're going to see anything done with Doctor Who until they get whatever's going on with Doctor Who itself.
That was very diplomatically put.
Well, you know, I mean, they've got it. we know that there's issues with Doctor Who, and I just don't think the BBC is going to. I think if you bring back Torchwood at this point in time, maybe it amplifies some of the issues that are currently going on with Doctor Who. And I think the BBC right now just feels like we've got to get this sorted out, and we still don't have answers yet. Maybe the BBC has some answers that they're holding in their pocket. I know there's all kinds of rumors floating around, but I think until they've made some announcements and made some decisions on what direction Doctor Who is going forward in, and they have some kind of more solid footing underneath them there, maybe you could see something with Torchwood. I wouldn't mind like a Torchwood Next Generation, because you could still have Jack Harkness at least be in the, do like at least another like introduction miniseries or something, and have Jack Harkness be involved in that fashion.
The way that John Steed was in the New Avengers, they could still have him at the center of it. But what I was wondering, Carl, because you mentioned BBC America earlier on, because BBC America, in the interim, they've had things like the Dirk Gently show have been quite successful for them. They were involved in Class, a later Doctor Who spin-off, which didn't turn out quite so well. But BBC America, they've had quite a few hit shows, Orphan Black and things like that. What's the profile of BBC America like there? If the BBC in this country are making a bit of a mess of everything at the moment, would BBC America be interested in this? Would they?
I would think BBC America would be interested in it. I just don't think the BBC is going to let it go. That's... Torchwood is kind of, okay, we've got this in our back pocket. You know,
we've
kind of got this. When the time is right, we're going to do it. And I don't think they want anybody doing something more with Torchwood. I think that's, they kind of learned that lesson with the Stars situation. And I think that's been kind of one of the reasons too, why that they've held off. And to be honest with you, the other issue we have to accept is, unfortunately, John Barrowman isn't immortal in real life.
No.
As much as we would love him to be and would treasure him to be.
Kyle, just break that to John Barrowman himself gently, would you?
Yeah, well, you know, when I saw a picture of him recently with gray hair, it was a little, it took me back a little bit. Yeah. But no, I mean, it's just, you know, he's an immortal soul without a doubt. But unfortunately, we haven't figured out how to stop the aging of the bodies. And you're going to get to a point where it's going to be hard to explain if John Barrowman's supposed to be immortal, you know, and have him on. So I think the window for Torchwood is there, but it's closing rapidly.
Yeah, and I think that what you've just spoken about, yeah, John Barrowman is aging beautifully, if you're listening.
Yeah,
we all love you, mate. But you're absolutely right. I mean, maybe there's a solution there where that could be part of the storyline. Why is Jack aging? He's not supposed to age. Maybe that could be some jumping up. Sarah, I'm going to ask you really simply, Torchwood, what do you want? What do you want it to be?
I would like it to come back. I don't know whether it'd be a series or just a one-off. I don't think a movie is feasible. I think there is a big audience for it, but you know, it's got to appeal to, you know, all audience, you know, the normies, as people call them. And I don't think that route.
But it has broad appeal, doesn't it? So you,
it has broad. I suspect, and this is just my thoughts, that he's going to make an appearance for the 60th anniversary special, because he wasn't in the 50th year. We've got all this de-aging technology now. I mean, we could have a younger Jack, and then at the end, you know, he finally gets to age. Yeah. And have his family, what have you, and then that would be nice. I think there's more
like
to say.
Like Christopher Lambert was in Highlander 2.
Yeah, exactly. Give him his, you know, his happy ending and, you know, his closure. I think there's definitely more that can be done. But, you know, like Kyle was saying, it's a touchy thing at the moment with what's going off. But, you know, again, nostalgia sells.
It does.
And whether we like it or not, you know, is Torchwood is, I guess, classed as archive TV now. So, you know, it's been a couple of years. We might see something. I would like to.
Yeah, I would too. I miss it. And I think the word, just the word Torchwood has got an identity of its own. I think, John Barrowman is, it's impossible not to hear the word Torchwood and not think of John Barrowman. Eve Miles as well, to a slightly lesser extent. You know, I know that she, for a time, she didn't want to play Gwen Cooper again, and I do completely see why. and she is back. I think she's more at peace with the role now. Obviously, she's done other things. She's done a lot of other things. Very consistent, very, very watchable. Really lovely actress. I really do like Eve Myles. And yeah, I desperately hope that something is done with it, because there are people out there, someone not a million miles away from the Fandom Podcast Network, who prefers, imagine this, Sarah, prefers Torchwood to Doctor Who. We're going to be having a word with Adam O'Brien about that at some point in the future. So listen out for that with the Fandom Podcast Network. I'm not sure where it's going to turn up, but we're going to hunt him down and we're going to find him. We're going to make him answer for his crimes. Yes, keep looking at that. But it's hugely popular. It's got a waiting audience who still desperately miss it. I think whatever happens, this is Doctor Who. It's still Doctor Who. It's only a matter of time. The audio ranges have sort of proven that. I can see the rift swelling up behind Kyle. Now it's going to swallow him up any minute. pull the goggles down, my friend. The light's blinking again. I'll be back with some more Type 40 very, very soon. Look out for that wherever you found this. Could have been on Apple Podcasts. Remember that they've changed the name. It's not iTunes anymore. It's Apple Podcasts. And you can search for the Fandom Podcast Network there. Drop us a review if you feel. It's not just for the for our egos, even though we know we're John Barrowman, we do have egos. It's not just for our egos. If you drop us a review, just new listeners can find us a lot easier. Even easier if you hit the five stars there. It's easier on the wrist as well to go for the five stars. Maybe you found us on the Podbean app, Stitcher, Google Play, or Spotify. We're very easy to find. It's also easy to use. You can search for the Fandom Podcast Network and see all the listings there. If you're feeling brave, you can contact us at Type 40 and the Fandom Podcast Network directly. Email at type40doctorwho@gmail.com. Twitter and Instagram, it's at Type40DoctorWho. There's our Facebook page, our Facebook group for all the extra dimensional chat inside and outside of the rift. Kyle, remind us again where people can find you. Where can they grab hold of you?
Of course, you can find me here on all kinds of stuff on the Fandom Podcast Network. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom.
How about you, Captain Sarah Graham?
You can find me on Twitter at StaryEyedGirl.
Easy to remember. And yeah, it's the same with me. Look for me. I'm everywhere as Type 40. I'm Dan from the Spacebook. And yeah, thanks both for your time. I've enjoyed this catch-up. It's been long overdue. We've finally got Torchwood a little bit out of our system. Yeah. We might revisit it at a later date. Who knows? But yeah, thanks to you for listening. You can join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for another episode of Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast where we always have the time if you have the space.